Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Russia's Sputnik Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with NHK Japan. First, an update on the anti-government protest in Thailand, which has continued despite an emergency ban. Security forces in Nigeria shot dead at least 12 citizens protesting police brutality and corruption. The United States and Russia announced they will begin talks on extending the last remaining nuclear weapons control pact. A U.S. peace activist has been trying to bring the question of nuclear weapons ban into the U.S. presidential debate. ICAN, or the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, says that the number of signatories needed to ratify a U.N. treaty to ban nuclear weapons may reach the required number this week. NHK Japan.
An update on the anti-government protests roiling Thailand. The country's prime minister says he's ready to lift the emergency decree in Bangkok if there's no violence.
The only way to a lasting solution for all sides is to discuss and resolve these differences through the parliamentary process.
Prayut indicated an extraordinary session of parliament will be held Monday and Tuesday to discuss the demonstrations. Protesters scuffled with royalist groups on Wednesday. The demonstrators' demands include Prayut's resignation and reform of the monarchy. Protesters have flooded the streets in and around the capital for 8 straight days despite the emergency decree announced on October 15th. It bans gatherings of 5 or more people. The demonstrators say the government is using the decree to detain their leaders. Security forces have opened fire on thousands of Nigerians protesting against police brutality in Lagos. Human rights group Amnesty International says at least 12 peaceful protesters were killed on Tuesday night at 2 large gatherings in the city. Protests have swept across Nigeria since a video allegedly showing police fatally shooting a young man went viral earlier this month. President Muhammadu Buhari has vowed to reform the police unit accused of involvement in the incident. However, protesters have continued to fill the streets. Lagos and several states are currently under curfew. While many protests have been peaceful, there are reports of violence. Protesters reportedly stormed a prison in a southern town on Monday, freeing about 200 inmates.
The U.S. and Russia have indicated they are ready to begin talks on extending the last remaining nuclear arms control pact between the two countries. The new START treaty is set to expire in February, but negotiations had hit a snag. The change of heart came on Tuesday when the Russian Foreign Ministry said it was willing to accept a U.S. proposal to freeze the number of warheads in each country's arsenal. Moscow had previously called for an unconditional extension. It now says it will go ahead, provided Washington does not impose any additional restrictions. Within hours, the U.S. State Department released a statement welcoming Russia's willingness to make progress on the issue. It said it's prepared to meet immediately to finalize a verifiable agreement. Now, the shift comes as campaigning in the U.S. presidential election nears its final leg. NHK World's Nochi Haruka has been following the efforts of a New York-based peace activist who wants to ensure voters don't forget how nuclear policies can affect human lives.
Rebecca Irby has been closely watching each candidate for months. Every debate, every promise. And each time, the issue she's dedicated her life to is left on the sidelines.
We don't have another 4 years to waste just playing around and pretending that these issues don't exist. So it's going to take the people, all of the people all around the world, coming together to push these issues forward.
Decades after the Cold War, disarmament efforts have largely stalled. And the U.S. and Russia still hold more than 90% of global nuclear warheads. Experts recently became more concerned about a new arms race after President Donald Trump withdrew from a key deal with Russia. His rival Joe Biden has promised to reduce the role of nuclear weapons, but has not yet set a concrete plan to shrink the U.S. stockpile. Every year, she goes to the United Nations with survivors to deliver petitions calling for a world free of nuclear weapons. She hoped for a breakthrough in 2020, 75 years after the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But attention was on the pandemic, which is now also the main focus of the election campaign. Irby wants voters to see this as a domestic issue, so she teamed up with indigenous activists to help people understand the horrific effect of these weapons. Irby says many young people are motivated to fight nuclear proliferation with the same urgency as they battle climate change.
There is more strife and conflict in the world, which could lead to more nuclear war. And if you are a person who believes in and reads science, like, you just start to, you see these things. It's inevitable. You can't not see them.
When people go to the polls, Irby wants them to think about these issues and then push their leader to take real action. Nochi Haruka, NHK World.
An international NGO says the number of signatories ratifying a UN treaty to ban nuclear weapons may reach the required 50 mark on Friday. Kawasaki Akira of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICAN, raised that prospect Wednesday during an online news conference.
If the treaty is enforced, it is expected that the use, production, export and import of those weapons will actually be significantly reduced and will be as close to zero as possible.
The UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons was adopted 3 years ago and would take effect 90 days after ratifications hit 50. So far, 47 countries have endorsed it. But nuclear powers and nations such as Japan that fall under the U.S. nuclear umbrella have not signed the treaty. They argue that nuclear disarmament should be a phased process.
That report was from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975-7245 and 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Sputnik Radio. George Galloway spoke with Professor Justin Podur of York University in Toronto about his new book called Extraordinary Threat. They discuss how Venezuela became called a threat to the United States so that sanctions could be imposed, and why Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro are censored by Western media while being esteemed by the majority of their population. Sputnik Radio.
8 years ago, my good wife and I, Gayatri, were privileged to be right at the heart of what turned out to be President Hugo Chavez's final victory. It was a tumultuous campaign, I must say, and the victory was, as all of his previous contests had been, a victory for Hugo Chavez. And I marveled at the way in which he could be called a dictator when he'd actually won more elections and referenda than any political figure anywhere on the planet. Chavez was regarded by his adversaries, domestic and foreign, as an extraordinary threat. And so the new book by Justin Podor, the assistant professor of environmental studies at York University in Toronto in Canada, this book co-written by Justin and Joe Emmersberger, this book, Extraordinary Threat, a threat of what and to whom?
The title's inspired by President Obama in 2015 in the U.S. In order to put sanctions on Venezuela, has to designate Venezuela as an extraordinary threat to the United States. And every year since, whether it was Obama or Trump, they've added that designation again. So every year, the U.S. has designated Venezuela as an extraordinary threat to the national security of the U.S. And our argument, Joe Emmersberger and I, is that it's the opposite. It's in fact the U.S. that constitutes an extraordinary threat to Venezuelans through these sanctions, through the continuous attempts to overthrow the government violently, and through a whole range of these kinds of hybrid war and propaganda campaigns that go along with sanctions and harder forms of power.
Who could, with a straight face, deny what you have just said? And yet the crooning, "Look great in a tan suit, Barack Obama," was the first to make this designation. How did he do that without laughing?
I know. It's incredible, especially when you look around in the region. I mean, right now in Bolivia, after overthrowing Evo Morales in a coup, the post-coup government is making arrangements to ensure that Morales' party can't return to power, even though every poll, every indication is that they would. And it's clear that that's exactly what would happen if they were to be successful in overthrowing today Maduro. But really, I'm glad you were there 8 years ago. It must have been a great moment. But like, it's not just Chavez, right? It's Chavismo. It's the idea that through constitutional means and through electoral means, you could advance towards what they were calling a movement towards socialism.
How does it come to pass we know that you should always try and walk in the other fellow's shoes. You should try and look through both ends of the telescope and see the difference in perspective. But how does it come to pass that someone seen by, at its height, the great majority of Venezuelans and the overwhelming majority of the poorest and most marginalized Venezuelans, who's seen as almost a saint, is seen as a devil from the Western standpoint? How do you explain that dichotomy?
We spend a lot of time talking about exactly why that's the case in our book. There's the media. We have a special chapter about one of your countrymen, Rory Carroll, writing in The Guardian, and just the sustained coverage over now two decades trying to paint an elected government as having no democratic legitimacy, trying to paint redistributive programs as some kind of political bribery, trying to paint a situation of economic collapse that's been exacerbated and even caused at this point, 5 years later, by sanctions, as economic missteps by the government.
Professor Justin Podor, thanks for joining us.
That interview was by George Galloway on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. In Bolivia, the new president is Luis Arce of the left-wing MAS party, formerly led by exiled President Evo Morales. In Santiago, Chile, tens of thousands gathered to demand greater social equality. In Bogota, Colombia, thousands of indigenous leaders and activists met to join a national strike against the government's social and economic policies and demand an end to the murder of social leaders in the country. Israeli forces attacked Palestinians taking part in protest against settlements in the occupied West Bank. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Bolivia's Supreme Electoral Tribunal has certified an absolute majority of votes and an advantage of more than 20 percentage points for Luis Arce and David Choquehuanca, representatives of the movement toward socialism. Pollsters using exit polling data and quick counts projected that Arce could get more than 53% of the valid votes. The victory of the MAS candidates could be by even a higher percentage because a large part of the votes have not yet been counted in the rural areas where the party of the former president, Evo Morales, has massive support. Once again, the Supreme Electoral Tribunal officially gives the victory to the movement towards socialism in Bolivia. The central Plaza Italia in Santiago de Chile was filled this Sunday by tens of thousands of people to commemorate 1 year since the beginning of the social protests in Chile to demand greater social equality. Groups of protesters began to arrive early Sunday morning. Tens of thousands of people gathered at the plaza, which became the epicenter of the protests that erupted on October the 18th, 2019. Mostly young people, but also families and older people, came to the square, renamed by the protesters as the Plaza de la Dignidad, Dignity Square, to commemorate the day when Chile awoke, but also to meet again in a massive protest after months when the pandemic of COVID-19 imposed a pause in the demonstrations, which were being held constantly in Chile. The demonstration yesterday took place 1 week before the historic plebiscite, which will consult Chileans on whether or not to change the constitution inherited from the Augusto Pinochet military dictatorship, one of the biggest victories of the social movement that erupted in the streets of Chile just 1 year ago. In Colombia, thousands of indigenous leaders and activists have arrived in the capital, Bogotá, planning to join a national strike against the government's social and economic policies. Unions, student groups, and others are taking part in the massive protest to demand the government of right-wing President Iván Duque end the violence and murders against social leaders in the country. One of the indigenous organizers told reporters in Bogotá, the Colombian capital, "What we want to do is debate with the government led by President Iván Duque. We want him to show his face, to debate the Minga and the Colombian people. There are 4 points. One is the defense of life. They are killing us. They are murdering our social leaders." Meanwhile, the murders of political and social activists continue. Two leaders with the leftist political movement Colombia Humana were assassinated Tuesday in two different regions of Colombia. Eduardo Alarcón was reportedly shot to death at his home by assailants on a motorcycle, and Gustavo Herrera was fatally shot while out on the street. Israeli forces have attacked Palestinians taking part in protests against Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank, leaving a number of people injured. Palestinian media reports said that the latest act of violence took place in Burqa village north of the Palestinian city of Ramallah. The Israeli soldiers fired tear gas and rubber bullets at the Palestinian protesters. Israeli forces also attacked journalists who were present at the scene, damaging their equipment. Earlier, Israeli settlers set fire to Palestinian agricultural lands in Burqa. According to human rights groups, incidents of sabotage and violence by extremist Israeli settlers against Palestinians and their property occur on a daily basis throughout the West Bank.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website has been rebuilt and is working well at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts like listeners of KZYX in Redwood Valley and KPHDLP in Modesto, California did this week. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Edward Snowden has been granted permanent residency in Russia. Then a series of brief reports on the COVID crisis, which is spreading at alarming rates across Europe, leading to the reinstitution of strict lockdown measures in several countries. Around the world, journalists have been harassed and arrested for reporting on the pandemic. In France, a middle school teacher was decapitated for showing students the Charlie Hebdo cartoons as examples of free press. Huge protests and crackdowns have followed. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Russian media is reporting that U.S. whistleblower Edward Snowden has been granted permanent residency by Moscow. Snowden has had asylum in Russia since 2013 after he leaked secret files that revealed vast U.S. domestic and international surveillance operations. His lawyer says he's not yet considering applying for a Russian passport.
The World Health Organization is praising the response of countries in Asia to the pandemic, the director general saying that Europe and North America should follow their example by persevering with anti-coronavirus measures and quarantining anyone who comes in contact with infected people. Preliminary results from a late-stage clinical trial in Brazil show that an experimental vaccine developed by the Chinese company Sinovac appears to be safe. That's according to one of Brazil's leading biomedical research centers. The trial's 13,000 participants will continue to be monitored. And in the UK, Wales has become the first European territory to reimpose a lockdown. Beginning Friday, everyone except essential workers will have to stay at home. This is in response to an accelerating second wave of the outbreak in Wales.
Spain has become the first European country to register 1 million infections. The country has been tightening restrictions in recent weeks as new cases continue to soar. And Russia is not planning to introduce any new measures to contain the virus. That's despite recording its highest daily death toll since the start of the pandemic. And South Africa faces a high risk of resurging coronavirus infections that may force the country back into a stricter lockdown. That's according to the country's health department. It comes after cases in Western Cape Province rose by 42% in the past 2 weeks.
Ireland has gone into a six-week lockdown. It's the first European country to order a second lockdown. Non-essential businesses will close, with bars and restaurants limited to takeaway service. And Indonesia is reporting nearly 4,500 new cases. The country has the highest number of infections and COVID-19 deaths in Southeast Asia. And AstraZeneca and Oxford University say their vaccine trial will continue despite the death of a volunteer in Brazil. Regulators say there are no concerns about the safety of the Brazilian trial.
Iran has recorded its worst day for coronavirus deaths, with 337 fatalities confirmed on Monday. There are now more than 530,000 confirmed cases in Iran. The country's health ministry says the current situation is due to fewer people wearing face masks and more people engaging in high-risk social behaviors.
Another victim of the global pandemic has been press freedom. Journalists have been harassed and arrested for reporting on the spread of the virus. Some governments have introduced laws punishing those who share information that doesn't support the official line. Muzzling the press can also endanger public health.
Behind the mask of coronavirus, censorship spreads. Journalists around the world have come under attack for reporting on the pandemic. It started in China, where citizen journalists dared to deviate from the official narrative. Cheng Shishui shared images of overstretched hospitals in Wuhan.
The virus is right in front of me. China's criminal prosecutors are behind me. I'm not afraid of death. Do you think I'm afraid of you, Communist Party of China?
Cheng Shishui disappeared in February and was only seen again by friends in September. Feng Bin, another reporter, remains missing. He had released secret videos of coronavirus victims. Reporters Without Borders has documented coronavirus coverage restrictions in nearly half of all UN member states. Those who are jailed are at risk of infection. Al Jazeera journalist Mohamed Mounir died in July from coronavirus after being arrested in Egypt, as did reporter Saleh Al-Shay, jailed for documenting corruption in Saudi Arabia. In Germany, journalists have been attacked by protesters while covering coronavirus denier rallies. The deliberate targeting of the press has worried the United Nations Human Rights Commissioner.
Across the world, COVID-19 is also being instrumentalized to limit people's rights to speak, to express opinion, and to participate in making decisions that affect their lives. In the Russian Federation, China, Kosovo, Nicaragua, and many other countries, I note reports of threats and intimidation against journalists, bloggers, and civic activists, particularly at the local level, with the apparent aim of discouraging criticism of the authorities' responses to COVID-19.
At a time when information can save lives, press repression can fuel the pandemic.
People across France took to the streets Sunday to show their solidarity with the victim of a brutal knife attack on Friday. Samuel Paty was a school teacher who used cartoons of the Muslim prophet Muhammad to teach students about freedom of expression. Police have since detained 11 people in connection with the killing. The suspect was shot dead by police soon after the attack.
Thousands of people came to the Place de la République in Paris to show their solidarity with slain teacher Samuel Paty. It was here where large groups also gathered following the 2015 Charlie Hebdo attacks. But today people wore signs saying Je suis enseignant, or I am a teacher. Many came here to grieve, but also to protest. They felt compelled to speak out in support of the teacher and freedom of speech. We're here to defend the Republic, liberty, equality, fraternity, and secularism. But it was not just in Paris. Communities came together across the country to remember the 47-year-old teacher. Secularism must be the unshakable foundation of our society, for that is what allows us to live together. We will not allow it to be attacked. We will continue our work when the school year and classes resume. We will return to teach without fear, because it is not students who committed this crime. It was a young person who obviously was not a student and failed to understand anything. Paty was on his way home from school when he was attacked. Shortly after, police surrounded the suspect and ordered him to drop his weapon. Authorities say they opened fire on the suspect after he attacked police. France is set to hold further national tributes for the victim in the coming days.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing the show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.